And welcome to the Half Guarded Power Hour. I'm your host, Zachary Trump Gilbert. It's my co-host, Dan Ford.
How you doing, y'all? Well, yeah. We know how you're doing, but
yeah, and
it's rhetorical.
we will say we recorded an election episode last night. It was horrible. It was just two drunk guys rambling who were very, maybe not super happy about this result. And I felt like we don't really need to talk election or politics on this show. Like, we famously did do a Brexit episode, and we may talk about, you know, some other issues in the future, but this has been done to death. You're tired of it. Whether you voted for Trump or Clinton, I think you're really ready to get back to college football. Like, what really matters in this country? You know, and let's make college football great again on the Power Hour.
And really, don't we all owe Americans as a civic duty, as entertainers, to give you something to think about other than the reality that you live in?
Yeah, and that's what we kind of want to do here. So, I mean, we can maybe do some brief thoughts on the election. It sucked. There, so let's go to college football, Dan. and let's go to last week. There was a pretty big game on CBS last week. LSU-Alabama. Real high-scoring offensive affair. Yeah. Well, not actually. It was very low-scoring. And it came down to Alabama kind of getting lucky on a turnover again.
Yeah, well, they also got lucky that a turnover wasn't called because Jalen Hurd totally fumbled that ball on that fourth down inside the red zone attempt, and the referees called him down. Because if the referees hadn't blown the whistle, LSU gets a touchdown, and the whole complexion of everything changes if LSU... Because at what point in that game did you realize LSU wasn't going to score an offensive touchdown?
I think, like, after halftime, it kind of set in when LSU maybe didn't score on their first drive back. Because that, to me, would have been the time for LSU. Because you're coming off, you had 10, 15 minutes to come up with your... You can kind of script your next drive. Kind of saw what Alabama was doing. And he really couldn't do anything. And that's not really a knock on the coaching staff. It's just... There's not a ton of... Like, they've got the running game, but passing sucks for LSU.
Yeah, they've done a great job, like, shuffling their offense into something that looks like halfway competent. But, like, you got to keep in mind, like, they took, like, this coaching staff took the reins, you know, in the middle of the season. They're just not going to be able to totally change everything about their offense, you know, in just a couple of weeks. They just didn't have the offensive firepower, and they didn't have the quarterback, you know, and that's pretty much all there was. But, you know, if that fumble recovery gets called correctly, that's a touchdown. Alabama got away with a safety. They got away with an intentional grounding in the end zone at one point. Should have been a safety. And you just start looking at that. If you get those two calls and it's 9-0 or 9-7, all of a sudden we got a different ball game, don't we?
Yeah. And I think this... I don't think this is, like, if you look at it, you're evaluating Coach O, does he stay? I don't think this game hurts them. I think they were competitive against the second or the best team in the nation. So it wasn't a bad loss for LSU necessarily. And it just shows if he had time to kind of fix his offense, maybe that is a game they can win next year.
Yeah.
They weren't outclassed by Alabama. I think that's...
No, they weren't. I mean, they stood toe-to-toe with them. Obviously, if Ed Orgeron had won that game, he would have gotten the job. So he did lose an opportunity to cement himself with the job, but he's still in it with a chance.
Yeah, and I think LSU probably wins. I think that's fair.
I think so too.
I think they can beat A&M, and I'm pretty sure they kill Florida. So
look, speaking of Florida, holy shit. Holy shit. Is can we just, like, what do we think about McElwain? Speaking, you know, Arkansas beat Florida 31-10.
Yeah.
What do we think about him as a coach?
I don't know how much damage Muschamp really did there. I know he's had time to fix things. I don't think he's a really great elite coach by any stretch, but Florida wasn't the best situation to inherit. And if you look at Florida, the coaches who had the most success were really top, like, some of the best coaches in their class with Urban Meyer and Spurrier. So I don't think it's as easy to win at Florida as people think, especially with a relevant relevant FSU, and you've got Alabama there picking off guys, especially from the panhandle. You've got a competitive Auburn. I mean, LSU's dipping their toes into Florida sometimes for recruiting. Georgia is. So it's harder to win at Florida than people think. You just don't go to Florida and win. Like, you have to do really well. And
yeah.
I think he's a good coach, but I don't think he's ever going to win anything at Florida.
I just don't see any progress with that offense. And the defense is still really good, but I don't, like, next year is going to be year three. You're going to have very few people left who Muschamp had hands-on coaching with. And is that defense going to be all that great in year three when you no longer have those Muschamp players well-versed in his system? I'm not sure. Is there any reason to think the offense is going to take a great leap forward? Well, we ain't really been given any. Because even when Florida's been winning under McElwain, it's been with, like, well, they got 200 yards and the other team got 100.
Yeah.
Great. Like, this and, offense, they have all of the same mistakes that they had under Muschamp. They have too many penalties. They have too much sloppy play. The defense gets tired three quarters of the way into any big game and gives up in the fourth. They give up three fourths of the way through the season, you know, like they did last week, because the defense gets sick of carrying the load every week, and the offense is putrid. It's a pathetic offense.
And I think this loss by Florida really does cement how bad the East is. Like, if you've been reading, you've been paying attention, you know the East is pretty bad.
Yeah.
But for your best team to lose to, like, one of the bottom three teams in the West, and Arkansas is a solid team, don't get me wrong, but they're not, you know, they're not world beaters by any stretch. And Florida was a team with one loss. So that's pretty bad.
Yeah. It's just they're a bad team, and they were the best the SEC East had to offer. So, and Arkansas just stomped a mud hole and walked dry.
Yeah. But was there anything else from the weekend that kind of, like,
I can give you an on-field report from Georgia Tech, yeah? North Carolina.
The live report, or the first ever Power Hour road report with Lee Marshall.
Sure.
I'm sorry, Dan Ford.
So I had I went to the Georgia Tech Carolina game in Chapel Hill. It ended up being UNC homecoming, so it was a lot of fun being around all those people enjoying themselves. They obviously, the home crowd was excited, although I got to sit next to a bunch of Georgia Tech people, and I had fun just, like, looking over at Georgia Tech people going, like, all right, what's the deal with this guy? What's the deal with that guy? They were very – I mean, these are the kind of people who traveled to Chapel Hill, so they're the hardcore fans, right? And so that, you know, just they're getting everybody's thoughts on Paul Johnson, getting their thoughts on Ted Roof. Here's my basic take. Georgia Tech needs to fucking pony up and get Paul Johnson a defensive coordinator, because this is bullshit to constantly be saddling him with these nickel and dime bullshit defensive coordinators who, like, aren't even cut out to be coaching at, like, the Minnesotas of the world, let alone at a place that thinks it's an ACC champion contender.
Yeah, and a team that was, you know, 2 years ago in a BCS bowl.
Right. I mean, when you look at the, you know, watching this game, because Carolina's offense just totally shredded Georgia Tech's defense. And it just made me start thinking about all the coordinators Paul Johnson's been stuck with. And his first coordinator there, I can't even remember the guy's name, but Paul Johnson did not have a speaking relationship with him. And it's just like he got forced to hire the guy because he wanted to hire a much better, he wanted to hire Ellis Johnson, who's a longtime SEC coordinator, and they gave him half the budget he needed to hire Ellis Johnson. So he got stuck with a turd. Then he got stuck with Al Groh. Then he found a good coordinator in Georgia Tech, in Charles Kelly, and Georgia Tech let him walk to Florida State instead of paying him what he needed to stay. Then he ended up with Ted Roof. And it's just one turd after another Paul Johnson stuck with. And Georgia Tech, I mean, you look at the history of this Georgia Tech team year in, year out, you know, they can't get stops, and their offense gets behind an eight ball because we all know they're an option-based offense. We all know they're heavily into running the football. You know, that's no shocker to anybody, but they put up 500 yards. It's just their offense moves the ball. It's when your defense puts you in that kind of hole where you're down 10-0 6 minutes into the game, what are you going to do?
So, I mean, it really makes no sense for Tech to not have a good defensive think we've talked about this before. Like, this is a team that needs to be almost defense first, but they're not. Yeah. Especially with all their offenses.
I've had thoughts that Paul Johnson, and Paul Johnson's very adamant against doing this. He's very big into time of possession and shortening games, but I've thought for years they need to switch it up and be more of a no huddle team, because it's just, when you look at that offense, a lot of it is getting guys out of position and screwing up which defenders are supposed to be, you know, what their assignment is. Like, that's Paul Johnson's big thing is, you know, every defense when they play a triple option team, they, you know, the big thing is, let's all, you know, you're assigned to each guy. You know, you basically play man defense on everybody.
Yeah.
And Paul Johnson is the master of screwing up your assignments.
No, and I wouldn't that
work?
At,
yeah.
Yeah. I think
wouldn't that work much better if
you
were at tempo?
Yeah. But I think you look at Malzahn at Auburn, like, not the same offense, but he does go run heavy and he does do a lot of things that mess with your assignments. And it's been really successful for him. Like him or not, he's been decently successful at Auburn. And that offense is usually pretty successful, especially at running the ball when he does go into that kind of, I like to call it like an evolved option. But yeah, that no huddle does really help with an option team, especially when defenses can't sub in a guy and you've got linemen getting gassed because they're getting pushed around or chasing people or running across the field. No huddle can really help, especially for a run-heavy team like Georgia Tech.
And you know, I know why he does it, because you know, you only got to look at the Navy Notre Dame game, where Notre Dame only ended up with 6 possessions because of, you know, Navy cut the game, you know, basically dominated time of possession to the extent that Notre Dame didn't even have a chance to really do much with the ball. So I get why he wants to do it. It's just Navy has to do that, and he had to do that at Navy because he has no talent. At Georgia Tech, he actually can get talent. He's never really adapted to the fact that he can get better talent at Georgia Tech than he ever could at his other jobs.
Well, and some of that's that my is only, not yeah, having coordinators around him who are smart enough to tell him, who aren't afraid, because they know they're good coordinators. And you get these, you know, you get these schlubs from the MAC or wherever, and of course they're too scared to tell Paul Johnson. He may be doing something.
And especially with the defensive guys who might go, you know, Paul, that no huddle stuff's really tough to defend. You might want to look into that. Like, why would you ever listen to a Georgia Tech defensive coordinator? They're always just stealing money.
Yeah. So that was, anything else kind of happen while you're in Chapel Hill? Like, notice anything? Was there wackiness, so to speak, for homecoming?
Oh, God. I mean, obviously a bunch of like old dudes returning to their old stomping grounds and throwing up on themselves, which, you know, that's what you expect. Nobody really likes to watch Georgia Tech play. Something about them depresses people.
Yeah, I think Georgia Tech would be the most depressing team in the ACC at the very least. Well, maybe not the... Yeah, I'd say that Georgia Tech's the most depressing team.
This conference has Boston College in it.
That's true. And, like, there's Wake Forest just sitting there where you're like, I could think of, like, a million things I'd rather do than watch Wake Forest play.
Dude,
half of those painful.
Yeah, the people I went to the game with are old friends of mine from my hometown of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And Winston-Salem, North Carolina is a famously boring place. And they swore to me up and down that Winston-Salem's cool now. But I don't believe I know they're lying. Because back in the day, we would go to Wake Forest games just to have something to do.
Yeah.
Which should tell you how lame Winston-Salem is.
And before we kind of get into the playoffs projections here, let's jump into the NFL roundup. We got a West Coast West back. We talk a variety of topics. I'm really excited about this one, actually. So there's some fun takes. So
I'm looking forward to it.
I got a really hot take about Mike Evans that's hopefully going to offend some people. So
former Texas A&M,
yeah,
Mike Evans,
kind of the only reason Manziel looked like a good quarterback at A&M.
Look, well, that and whiskey.
Yeah, but let's jump in to the NFL roundup of West Coast West.
All right, here we are. I'm Zachary. Here I'm Miriam with West Coast West for the NFL roundup on the halfguarded.com Power Hour. How you doing, Wes?
I'm doing well. Greetings to everyone out there. And Zach, I have a question for you right off the bat. If you were to elect a president and you had to choose from one of the quarterbacks in the NFL, who would you select?
That's a tough one. but I think I'd go with, you know what? I think I'd go with Tom Brady. Here's why. Good leader, and he distributes the wealth to everybody.
That's well thought. Thought that one through and covered all the bases. I like that pick. I mean, you know, as much as I don't like that pick, I like your reasoning and probably get behind a USA led by Tom Brady. Do you want to know who I would pick?
Yes, I would. I'd love to know.
Cutler. Ooh. Jay Cutler. Yeah.
Why Jay Cutler?
Well, he stands up for the rights of the Jay community. And, you know, I mean, guy never quits. He's. I feel less is more when it comes to the explanation on this one. It speaks for itself.
You know what? And hot wife.
Yeah.
Drives a minivan. Humble guy. You know?
Sure. Deals with diabetes, so he's made sacrifices over the years.
Yeah, he's a handicapped American.
He is.
Disability. He's pretty impressive.
He's risen above.
Yeah, like an FDR type is what you're saying.
Sure. There are a lot of parallels there. I mean, this we could cover an entire 3-hour podcast on this topic right here, but I guess we'll leave it alone for now and let the listeners' imagination run wild.
But we are recording this on election night, so if you notice one of us get really distracted, that's something weird probably just happened in Florida. So this will sound weird when you hear it in a day or two. You're like, oh, this election's still going on.
Yes, well, if it is, then we're in the middle of hell right now, I can tell you that much.
You're like, oh, I remember 2 days ago when America wasn't a torn war zone over this election. But let's jump into the NFL. Kind of a war zone of its own, if you will. Last week, kind of a fun week for football. Like a nice little defensive matchup on Sunday. Monday night, full of wackiness in offense. Not the worst. And you had some fun games. Like you had Detroit, Minnesota. You know, nice little comeback there. And a lot of fun little kind of shootouts this week. A lot of offense.
And I think that is that touches on something that I've noticed throughout the league. At this point in the year, we're starting to see some separation in terms of teams who can put up points when they need to, and some teams that we thought were contenders that might not be at this point because they can't. You take a look at a team like Minnesota. I mean, they just flat out can't score points at this point in the season. Denver is struggling with the same things. Even Philadelphia may not have the weapons, and it's starting to show. So I don't know about you, but I think our contenders are becoming more clear, and they may not have been some of the teams that we liked early in the year.
Yeah, and I'm kind of ready to take Minnesota way off that contenders list. I'm kind of ready to take them off my team that'll probably play a home game in the playoff list, because I'm kind of liking Detroit to win the North.
Well, how times have changed, because both of us were very much into the Vikings just a few weeks ago as the number one seed in the NFC, and now they're, you're right, Detroit nipping at their heels and getting the big victory in the way that they did, and the momentum going south for Minnesota in every single way right now, they could be in a battle for a wild card spot before you know it here. So I think I have to agree with you, and it would be quite the testament to Matt Stafford and the Lions if they were to finally succeed, triumph, and get into the playoffs here after so many years of coming closer. Coming not so close.
And this week, I mean, we saw Dallas kind of separate themselves again. I don't want to call it now. I don't want to call it too early. I'm going to pull CNN here. But I think I'm calling Dallas for the number one seed in the NFC.
Yeah,
it's not too close to call.
I think the polls are indicating that that Dallas is well in charge of that spot at this point, and I would go with them on that side. And obviously New England, it appears to be the projected winner, if you will, in the AFC.
No, I think, and I think the story right now is it looks like Seattle, Atlanta, New England, and Dallas kind of have locked up their playoff spots. Seems like now everyone else is kind of separating from the middle of the pack to maybe that second-tier teams. That's kind of what we got going down the NFL.
That's what it looks like, especially with the divisions playing out in the way that they are. I mean, some are just more clear than others. You have a team like Seattle, for instance, that, I mean, they don't look like world beaters by any stretch of the imagination, but when you take a look at the competition within the division, it's hard to imagine them losing that playoff spot. Whereas in the North divisions, on both sides of the ball, we've got ourselves quite the dogfight. And, I mean, I know you feel the same way about Pittsburgh as I do, but they made a fatal mistake this weekend with some personnel decisions.
No, and it was kind of a shock. Came in Sunday morning, I tweeted it out to you. You were flabbergasted, offended. Roethlisberger got the start over our boy, Mr. 50-50 Landry Jones.
It was what I woke up to, basically, and it couldn't have been a worse start to the day for me. I checked your tweet. I had to confirm it independently. Not that I don't trust you, but I was just so... It was one of those denial things, you know?
Yeah.
You know what the reality of the situation is, but you refuse to believe it. And so, sure enough, after you broke the news, Adam Schefter confirmed to me, personally, that Landry Jones wouldn't be playing. And I knew at that point that they were going to lose. And sure enough, look what happened.
Yeah, and I think Baltimore... We kind of talked about this before, I guess, but Baltimore, they feel like a mid-level team, but they could win this division now. Like,
they could, because Pittsburgh isn't inspiring anybody right now. Even Le'Veon Bell doesn't look fantastic at this point. I mean, suddenly you have, and this could be the product of the environment, but suddenly it's not like the Le'Veon Bell, Antonio Brown show that we've seen in the past, and there's a lot of question marks, and if they're not going to allow Landry Jones to develop and get that chemistry going in a way that would be unparalleled in NFL history, then they could be in for a fight. Whereas a team like Baltimore does what Baltimore does. They've got an elite quarterback and they've got a defense that is always productive. So I mean, if I were a betting man right now, there's too much up in the air with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and I'd probably have to go with the surefire bet in the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, but even then you have Cincinnati kind of nipping on the heels there, and like they're not that far out of the race. I think they're a game and a half back. The tie doesn't really help, but it could come to their advantage later on. We'll see. But that's an interesting race to watch. That one's too close to call, if you will, at this point.
Yes, it is. It is. We're going to need a lot more time. We may need a recount at the end of the year. We may need to replay a few games. Get that tie off the board, things of that nature. But yeah, that's the one to watch, even if it's not the most exciting thing sometimes.
Yeah, and I think over in the NFC North, Green Bay blew a big chance to make some ground there with Minnesota dropping, I think, what's that, their third straight game. Green Bay blows it versus a pretty bad Indianapolis team. And then you've got Chicago, and Chicago's probably not doing anything. And now Detroit, kind of not in the driver's seat, but they kind of control their destiny, I feel like, at this point. They just keep winning. Well, they've got it.
I would say this, first and foremost, with Jay Cutler back in the picture, never say never. There's still time for the Bears to go on a run. But you're probably right. The Lions look to be the team with the momentum. And obviously, with Minnesota losing three straight, as you said, Green Bay's dropped a couple now. It gets tougher and tougher from here on out. And I think this portion of the podcast is pulling for Detroit in some odd way, shape, or form. I mean, I'd like a little fresh blood in there. And, you know, Minnesota's gotten the raw deal with their injuries and what have you, but that's the way it is for this year. So why not? No. Why not vote Lions 2016?
Yeah. And I think, you know, you bring up injuries, and, you know, the Packers have had theirs, especially at running back. You've had Randall Cobb struggling with injuries. I mean, Nelson's coming off an ACL tear from last year. So is he really 100%? And Detroit hasn't really been bitten that bad by the injury, bro. I think Ebron just came back from injury, but that's kind of their only major key player. He's kind of gone down. I mean, they had some trouble with Theo Riddick, but their running game's not the reason Detroit wins games. They're winning because of Matthew Stafford, that deep receiving.
Exactly. And so that's what it comes down to this time of year, who can stay healthy and who's gotten through the year without suffering a bunch of catastrophic or detrimental injuries. And you're right, compared to other teams, they're looking pretty good right now. So I don't mind seeing Green Bay break down and fall into the cellar of that division. And like I said,
you know, and Minnesota,
they can hold Cutler off.
Minnesota had more injuries on defense this week. I think they had two more guys go down in the secondary. That was their strength. Mm. You know, you can maybe lose some linemen and get away with winning some, you know, close ball games because your defense manufactures points. But when your key players are getting hurt on that defense, Minnesota didn't really have anything left.
You're right. That's what was holding them together at this point, because the offensive line has all but failed, and Bradford's
there's no run game.
More hits. Yeah. No run game. Exactly. So they're losing all of their strengths, and it could be a pretty dire situation by the time, say, December rolls around. So they're in trouble.
You know, we talked about, you know, key players. You know, we've reached kind of past the midway point of the season. We're in November. Who are we liking for MVP?
Cutler. No, I think that I know you will agree with me on this probably right here, but I have to go with Matt Ryan. I think MVP is one of those things where you can define it in so many different ways, and there are so many guys out there that if they went down, that their team would, I mean, you'd really notice, obviously, particularly if Tom Brady went down, although the Patriots played well without him. But the point is that there are guys like that. So to me, MVP is kind of the year of who's having that year, who's elevating their team, who's got some momentum, who's putting up numbers. And it's tough to beat Matt Ryan right now. I know you'll like that pick, but you may disagree with me. What do you think?
I feel like it's going to be Brady because of the New England bias we have in our sports journalism. It's disgusting. Right. I hate it. But there is a strong New England bias because of ESPN. And Brady has been – that's not to say Brady hasn't been impressive and that he doesn't deserve the MVP. But I feel like it's up between those two. And if it's between those two, Brady's always going to win over Matt Ryan in a popularity contest with middle-aged, bald, white NFL writers.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. And as you said, Tom Brady, I mean, you can pretty much make a case for him every single year in terms of his MVP status. But when you take a look at what New England was able to do early in the year without Tom Brady, play quite successfully, I think that there's a case to be made for Matt Ryan in the sense that if he goes down, what do you have? Schaub behind him?
Yeah. Schaub look great. I'd argue Schaub be better than Matt Ryan right now. Judged by the preseason and what the fan base felt at one point. Because you forget, 2 weeks ago, there's an article in the AJC, it's Matt Ryan on the hot seat. Like, really?
God. Jesus. What have you done for me lately is the state of sports, really the state of the world. And it's like a guy like Matt Ryan, who is a, people forget how talented he is somehow.
No, and I think people forget... the best quarterback in probably the history of Atlanta, Michael Vick's career got cut short, but we've never really had a consistent guy like him, and like we're ready to chase him out of town, it seems like, half the time.
Yeah, short of former UW superstar Chris Chandler, I can't think of anybody else who could compete with that guy. Yeah, he's your franchise guy, but again, short memories and God forbid you screw up 1 week because your job will be on the line in terms of public opinion.
And like every game I believe he's ever lost in the playoffs was to the eventual Super Bowl winner. So I don't know. Like I know people like to get on him about the playoff wins, but he ran into some really good teams. They're teams that went to the Super Bowl, maybe not won it, but definitely went.
Yeah.
So I think that hurts. I think voters remember that kind of stuff. It feels like Matt Ryan's not really elite because he... maybe has never been to a Super Bowl. I feel like Brady wins, but I think there's a dark horse in this race. His team's not doing so hot, but he's having a great year, and that's David Johnson for Arizona.
Well, yeah, you have to consider. I mean, he's one of those guys who won't win because of the factors you just listed. But
he probably is the real MVP. Maybe if Ryan gets hurt, Schaub can do well at that receiving court. It's really good in it. If Brady goes out, we've seen New England can be competitive. Maybe not as good, but they'll probably still win the division. David Johnson goes out, this Arizona team might have two wins.
Right. It's all about what's happening around these players as well, obviously, hence the term valuable. And, I mean, things have crumbled around David Johnson all year long. Carson Palmer's in, he's out. When he's in, he's old. When he's out, and they have to rely on Drew Stanton and people like that. And there's not a, I mean, it's not the Arizona teams of the past where they were as stout across both lines. It's a one-man show in a lot of ways. So he'll be that guy that goes down in the history books in terms of fans who really pay attention to seasons. And they'll remember that David Johnson was a critical component of a team that probably won't end up going anywhere, to be honest.
Yeah. But yeah, a really solid season for him. So I'd like to point that out. Is there any other player who's having like a really solid season that's not getting a lot of press to you? Is there someone maybe you've noticed? Like whether you noticed him maybe because he's on your fantasy team or something like that?
I noticed Russell Wilson. I mean, I just noticed that if you want to talk about valuable players, I mean, they'd be garbage without him. But no, nobody too obvious. How about you? Some sort of, like you said, another dark, a darker horse?
Maybe perhaps a darker horse might be the better word for it. I look at a guy like Mike Evans or Mike Thomas from the same. He's probably my rookie of the year for offense, Mike Thomas. Evans has had like a really unbelievable year. There's a lot of receivers that I don't think anyone's really noticing that are having like great years.
Right. Well, think about a guy like AJ Green or somebody like that as well. I mean, Mike Evans is a great pick in terms of he's probably elevated himself quietly into the top 10 wide receivers in the league at this point, if not higher up.
You know what? Hot take. I'd take Mike Evans over AJ Green.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Hold on, I need to strip down because I'm getting a little too hot in here. That's one hell of a take.
Yeah. I like his
confidence.
No, the injuries. AJ Green's been playing longer, obviously, but the injuries are always my kind of weird concern with AJ. And I just feel like I like Evans' game a lot. I loved him in college. Like, I think he ends up better than Julio Jones.
Well,
yeah,
that is certainly, I mean, we're talking about 135 Fahrenheit with this take right here. And to hear you say that about Julio, I mean, Julio, a man that is near and dear to your heart, obviously. Yes. I
think Evans does things different than Julio or even an AJ Green. Like, I think of these guys as more classic route runners, but Evans' hands and his ability to turn around, he reminds me of Gronk too weirdly, the way he can make some crazy catches. And if he can get like a really consistent Winston, that's going to be interesting in Tampa Bay. That offense could be very good real soon.
So let me wrap up this Mike Evans praise with one quick question. If you could take Mike Evans and you really wanted to elevate his career, what team would you put him on? Would that imagine Mike Evans, say, as the missing weapon in Philadelphia?
You put him in Philadelphia. I think if you put him in Dallas, he's got the best receiving core in recent memory. I think if you plug him in a team that kind of needs a boost, I think if you put him in Minnesota, that team probably isn't losing three straight, I think, because he can go in there and make a play. You know, as good as Stephon Diggs and some of those other guys are, he's way better. I think you put him in New England, and he makes it offense twice as good.
Don't do that. Don't do that, for the love of God. I think that Dallas fantasy is something to really ponder for a few moments if you want to get excited.
I think, you plug him in Baltimore. Baltimore is like a contender to have a bye, I think, in the AFC.
Yep.
With that defense. Yep. And Flacco's never had we can get on to Flacco about, you know, a lot of stuff, but he's never really had a consistently great receiver besides like a 57-year-old Steve Smith Sr.
All right, yeah, their best receiver is still probably Steve Smith or even maybe a Mike Wallace, but yeah, Mike Evans would turn them into a force pretty quickly. All good things to kick around.
Maybe I'm overhyping Mike Evans, and then he'll turn in a one catch game next week. But I like his game a lot. It's really impressive.
Yeah, we'll worry about that next week. For now, Mike Evans is the man.
Yeah, but it's funny you bring up next week, because let's jump to pick'ems. Let's kick it off with a huge Thursday game. Cleveland, Baltimore. Baltimore are favored by 10. Probably taking Baltimore here. I don't think Cleveland gets a win this year. And kind of a shame, because Hugh Jackson's a good coach and he probably has to get fired. Probably will never head coach again if Cleveland doesn't win a game.
Yeah, you're probably right about that, unfortunately. And we probably see some quarterback get drafted high, and that's the end of that guy's career immediately, perhaps. So I'm going to have to go with you. I mean, a Baltimore team with Mike Evans will win this game by 35, but I'll take this Baltimore team by, I'll go 17 here. Easy.
Yeah. All right. Kansas City, Carolina, and what feels is going to be a defensive game, a lot of running, maybe a really quick game. Carolina favored by 3. Carolina's hot. I like Kansas City, even though they're going on the road. I like Kansas City there.
Well, Kansas City is the forgotten about team still in the AFC West, despite being in second place at this point, 6-2. I'll take Carolina still just because at home and a little bit of momentum. But I think that could be the game of the week in a week where we have some pretty high marquee games. That one could be one to keep an eye on early on.
Yeah, I think of our first kind of marquee games, I'm going to take a look at Denver, New Orleans. New Orleans favored by 2. Denver's struggling. New Orleans has looked really solid lately. I like New Orleans here. They're favored by three. I like them to win by that. I like them New Orleans by a touchdown.
Yeah, I would go with that as well. I really don't like what I see of Denver right now. Granted, I think they got beat by an Oakland team on Sunday night. That was just, they came out with that type of energy that you have when you have a chance to make a statement as a young team on a primetime stage. But that Denver defense is banged up now, and that offense really isn't much to talk about. Hasn't been for a while, so I'll go with New Orleans. I'll go with New Orleans by 10.
Ooh.
Yeah.
All right, we got Atlanta, Philadelphia, pick them right now.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, pick them. I mean, we talked about Matt Ryan all day long. I like the Falcons as a team who can flat out score on the road. More importantly, and that's what they are this week. So I'll take Atlanta in a good game. But I'll take.
I like Atlanta here. This we always be an Atlanta fan for a second. We always kind of blow games to Philadelphia. It feels like seems like Philadelphia kind of has their number. Maybe I'm. Feels like especially in recent memory. I think Atlanta wins here. They looked really good last week, and if they can keep that momentum going, and they're gonna have a lot of time to rest, and that's Julio Jones on 10 days rest, so you could go off.
Yeah,
this week, so that should be interesting. All right, Minnesota, Washington, and kind of a battle of teams that kind of both need a win here. I'd argue Washington favored by 3. I like Washington here. I think Minnesota keeps their free fall going. They're free falling like Tom Petty.
They are like Tom Petty. They are free falling, and I have to agree with you. I obviously I'm not confident in them anymore at all, and it shows how fickle I am. But that's just the. I mean, we're looking at the facts. This team hasn't done anything impressive in 3-4 weeks now. Whereas Washington, you know, I don't see a lot for Washington in the future either. But who knows? And it's at FedEx Field there, so I'll take the Redskins for sure.
Yeah. All right, your boy, Jay Cutler. This one's kind of going back and forth with the books. We're going to stick with my boys at Westgate Superbook. And that's Chicago by 1.5 over Tampa Bay.
Well, first of all, what a man, Jay Cutler. And if I haven't said it enough, I'll say it again. He is a difference maker. I'm surprised they're favored, quite honestly, because I don't think enough people recognize his greatness, and Tampa Bay, and say what you will, they have Mike Evans, and they have several weapons. But
well, maybe he had like a concussion last week, so.
And that's true. I can't sit here in good conscience and pick against Jay Cutler and the Bears, so I'll take the favorite to win by, man, what the hell? It's a half-guarded podcast. Power Hour, 21-point win for the Bears.
Ooh, like that. I like... Tampa Bay got embarrassed last week. You got to think they respond. Chicago is a pretty bad team. I think Tampa Bay wins here. Dallas, Pittsburgh in your Joe Buck game, I would assume. Yes. Pittsburgh favored by 2.5. It's kind of weird.
Very weird. Do they know something? Did they get the scoop on perhaps
a Landry Jones another start?
Yes, sir. Another quarterback change. If that's the case, I am still going to pick Dallas, but I would understand the point spread a little bit more if that were the case.
Yeah.
How about you?
It's at home. Pittsburgh's coming off a loss, which I think Pittsburgh's a good team. Rarely do good teams lose back-to-back in the NFL. I think I like Pittsburgh here, actually.
So you like Dallas
needs another loss in there somewhere. And this could be it. Like, I like Dallas to get 13, 14, 15 wins. This right here could be your, not 15, sorry, 14 or 13 or 12 wins. They're going to be in that range. They're going to get another loss at some point. Pittsburgh seems right. They're a good team. Is that Pittsburgh? That's my prediction.
I see where you're coming from. You know, at some point, a team does have to let off the gas a little bit in terms of how their season goes and what they really need to play for. I'm still going to take Dallas, though, because I think Pittsburgh, they made the change they shouldn't have made, and they're trusting a guy who's banged up as opposed to the future. So I'm going with the Cowboys by 7.
I can't blame you there. Seattle, New England. New England favored by 7.5. My guts tell me New England. My heart's telling me Seattle. I think Seattle pops the Adderall. They get hyped. They're on short week rest. They're going across country. They're going to pop some speed. I like Seattle catching 7.5, maybe to lose by 3.
Well, this is a game that is more interesting now, just 24 hours removed from Seattle showcasing a different offensive approach and finally embracing the fact that they have a guy like Jimmy Graham and they can throw to him whenever they want to, and acknowledging as well that the run game is non-existent at this point in time. So, and not only that, but the Bills were able to score on the Seattle defense. So I think this becomes a high-scoring game. I hate to pick against my team for the second week in a row. I was obviously wrong last week, but in New England,
no, you were right. Seattle didn't cover.
Well, that's a good point. Technically, I was correct. I thought the Bills were going to beat them outright, and I also predicted a Percy Harvin punt return, and I'm not really sure if Percy Harvin was on. He was out there. I saw him. I saw him, but he might not show up in the stat sheet. The point is that 7.5, I think that's a fair spread. I'll take New England by 7. How's that sound? So the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
I'll pick Seattle. I put my money on Seattle, but New England's still to get the victory. Just a safe, cheap garbage pick.
And then finally, on Monday night, could have another fun offensive battle on Monday night. Cincinnati, New York, battle of the two of the best receivers in the NFL. New York's favored by 2.5. This feels like a must-win game for both teams to kind of stay alive. I like Cincinnati. Cincinnati knows they have to get a win more than New York. New York's coming off the big win last week. I think Cincinnati wins here. They have to. If they're going to make it, if they're going to make any kind of push at all for this division, this is the week to get a win. They're coming off a bye. I like Cincinnati here, I think.
I think I have 2 points when it comes to this game. The first builds off of what you just said. Cincinnati knows they need to get a victory, whereas that's the type of thing that I'm not sure the Giants are ever really aware of on a week-to-week basis. It just seems like they show up to play. They do what they do. They're talented. They don't know if they're in a race or not. I guess they always just sort of figure they are, and as a result, they end up with a plus 500 team most of the time. But I'll go with the Bengals. But second, a lot of charisma at the quarterback position in that game. I mean, you want to talk about two guys where you could really just set your watch to and model yourself after. I mean, I don't know which one would you pick. If you could be one for a day, any given day, would it be Eli Manning or would it be Andy Dalton?
Take Eli Manning. I don't believe in gingers. I believe in ginger genocide. I'd be Andy Dalton so I could kill myself or get or cut off my dick so I can never have a kid. So I'll be Andy Dalton. I'd sterilize myself and be Andy Dalton. But Eli does have some advantages because you do have two Super Bowl rings you can look at. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, it's tough for me to top that, and I'm not even going to try. But I think I would pick – I think it'd be more enjoyable to be Eli Manning and to live in that world that he lives in of ignorant, talented bliss. And if I could figure it out for a day, I might be able to go and – take out my brother so we never have to see him in the booth again, of course.
That's a big advantage. So, I mean, you can stop gingers from existing or get rid of Peyton Manning for all. So it's a toss-up, really.
It went in a sadistic direction that I didn't expect, but I'm glad that it did, and it shows what kind of thinkers we are.
Yeah, and so as we're wrapping up here, anything you're really looking forward to sports-wise or just country-wise? How are you going to prepare for this Civil War?
Like I always do, just get up and get dressed and walk outside and see what things are happening. I don't have much of a plan. Civil War breaks out, I'll go out early. I don't mind saying that. I'm not prepared to adequately defend myself against a militia of sorts or anything like that. But in the short term, you can look for me on College Game Day this weekend live from the University of Washington. I plan on showing up at 6 a.m.,
So power hour sign, maybe like a hyperlink on the sign, like http/, link to the RSS feed, or
I'll have something digital that people can hold their phones up to the TV and
a QR code might be nice.
Exactly. Yeah. I'll get the hookup, but, it's either that or some sort of, I mean, I've got some ideas for an Andy Dalton related sign right now that'll probably get me kicked off the campus. But that's the plan. Big Saturday for me, and of course a big Sunday for us. So how about you? You got your finger on the pulse of the nation right now. How do you feel?
We'll see. As we're recording, things have shifted dramatically. So we'll see. I'm a white guy. Nothing bad's gonna happen.
We're white males. It's fine.
Well, We've got that. We're not happy about it, but we've got that advantage. We're not afraid to use it because we're all
absolutely
stumped.
Not.
So yeah. Yes. All right, but back to me and Dan. This was the NFL Roundup.
Sweater. When I dropped that Mike Evans could be a top three. Dan, you haven't heard it yet, but I'll go and say, I said I'd take Mike
What are
Evans
you talking about? I listened to the whole conversation here in the corner. What's wrong?
Yeah, but I said I'd take Mike Evans over AJ right now. I'm a big – I love the way Mike – I love his game because it reminds me of like a Gronk at wide receiver.
I'm burnt.
Just with his catching ability, yeah.
I'm so burnt.
Love the guy. But let's jump into the playoffs. I think you've got those pulled up on your screen over there.
Sure.
Nothing like super shocking. I thought maybe LSU dropped too far. Not that it really matters because they're out of the race. A&M above Penn State and Auburn feels kind of wrong because I don't think A&M's
kinda
a good team. Yeah.
Yeah. They also lost to Mississippi State. Like that should be. Like, that should be, we drop you out of the rankings. Like, well, sorry, you lost to Mississippi State.
After having your chance to prove to the nation that you're a good team and you lose to a that's supposed to be.
That was the most Texas A&M thing, too. Because there's nothing more Texas A&M than
blowing the big game.
Than blowing the big game as soon as people are paying attention to you.
Yeah,
like, the moment anybody gives a shit about you, that's when you blow it.
Yeah. So classic, like you said, classic A&M, just blowing it in a big situation.
There used to be that thing we always used to joke about called Clemsoning. That really always should have been called Aggie-ing.
Yeah, because, I mean, A&M's blown it a lot.
They've been doing that for 50 years,
even since they've come to the SEC. I think every year they've blown a situation where maybe they could have competed for the West.
I mean... Also just joining the SEC was in a way Aggie-ian because at the point that they left the Big 12, if they just stayed, they probably would have played in a national championship at this point.
Yeah. But any other kind of surprises? Like a Washington finally joins the top four.
Right.
Top three kind of stays the same.
They should have been embarrassed to have not had that from the get-go. I'm kind of surprised Ohio State above Louisville. Just because their loss is so much worse, but
the problem is Louisville really hasn't beaten nobody, Paul.
Who's Ohio State beating, Paul?
Nobody either, but I think the Big Ten still has this weird better reputation in the ACC. It shouldn't, but it does.
Like, the ACC is the best conference in college football this year, as far as depth, and they have the best combination of depth and top-end teams. Because, you know, the SEC and the Big Ten have really great teams. Well, the Big Ten has, like, three or four really great teams at the top. The Big Ten has two great teams, two really good teams, and then everybody else blows.
Yeah.
The SEC has one great team, like, three good teams, and then everybody else blows.
Yeah.
The ACC has, like, two great teams and then a bunch of people in between. Like, Florida State and Carolina would both win the SEC East easy, you know.
I think Miami probably could win the East.
Miami obviously would win the SEC East.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's –
The best thing about that, though, is that the proof is that really all you got to do to get good is have the money to afford coaches and then go hire good coaches. And pretty soon your conference will be good.
Yeah.
I promise you.
I think people – yeah, people still think this is like the ACC from years ago, and like, no, this is a really good, not even just football, like a really solid for all the major college sports. ACC is a good athletic conference.
Yeah,
the ones
Bronco Mendenhall is like the second or third worst coach in the conference, and Bronco Mendenhall is one of the best coaches of the last like 20 years.
Yeah. So, but any other like surprises, really? Like, obviously, Penn State not getting a lot of respect. Does A&M lose again next? We'll get into that in a little bit with the pick-ems. But, I mean, A&M's probably going to lose at least one more game, maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
they beat Ole Miss this week.
They're going 7-5.
Yeah.
You know it in your heart. Like, in your heart, you know that's what's going to happen.
Yeah.
As far as big surprises, I don't think Washington State's getting enough respect, and I know they lost to the FCS team in week one, but the fact that USC's ranked above them is to me kind of stupid.
Yeah.
Because, like, USC, I spent the first 3 weeks of the season being complete ass. And that just feels like, well, they're USC, and they're halfway decent, so we got to rank them high. That's the way it is.
That's kind of the annoying thing. Like, we even saw it with the computers. Like, these prestige programs get kind of inflated, artificially or whatever. Like, I think back to some of the worst BCS decisions, and you had USC going to the BCS bowl games that people maybe thought, or you had Nebraska, or these teams that had solid reputations that kind of get overinflated when they're good, but they're not really that good.
Yeah. That's always the danger. That's always the danger when you have human beings making decisions, is that they'll revert back to, well, I've heard of Nebraska, or I've heard of USC, Washington State, they play in Pullman. They're never that good, you know.
They don't count. Louisville, they're good at basketball, right? Not football. Ohio State's good at football.
I think Michigan, I mean, obviously they're in the top four, so they're probably just happy to be in the top four. But I think Michigan's getting fucked on their seeding just because people went into the season with the perception that they had an easy schedule. And it doesn't really matter how much that perception is turning out to be wrong because, you know, well, they have an easy schedule.
Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. But let's, speaking of easy schedule and not blowing things, let's go to Pick'ems.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And let's kick off with Boston College, Florida State. Florida State favored by 21. Boston College, not a very good program. FSU going to beat them by 3 scores?
Yeah, they'll beat them by 3 scores. Boston College is ass trash. They're the trash that comes out of your ass. That's what they are.
I think so, too. I think FSU gets it done. But I wouldn't be shocked if FSU, like, maybe messes around for the first half.
Sure. That is the patented Florida State deal.
Yes. Pittsburgh-Clemson. I think Clemson favored by 20. I don't know if I love that, but I love Clemson to win.
Yeah, Clemson's going to win.
My
beloved Pitt, you know, the defense just wasn't there. But their offense is really good, so that's why I'm taking Pitt, because that's just way too many points. Pitt is too good to be, you know, getting that 20 points, period, you know, against anybody.
I kind of have my lock of the week, and I really don't like locking this team up, because they should be locked up behind bars. And that's Penn State, favored by just 7 versus Indiana. They're going to kill Indiana.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. They're going to leave them on the side of the street.
Yeah. They're going to take them into the shower, really.
Okay. That's not good.
All right. Louisville, Wake Forest. Louisville favored by 35.
That's not enough.
Yeah. What's the over in that game? Looking. Lost track. It's 54. Louisville might get the over by themselves.
Yeah, I'm just letting you know the only way I'd take Wake there is if it was if you were giving me 50. I'd need half 100.
This is going to be a take Wake. We've got a Navy coming off a big win last week, but underdogs to Tulsa. Tulsa by 1, so I'll pick them.
Yeah, I'm taking Navy. That's weird. Tulsa's not that good.
Yeah. I see Navy minus 3 for one book, but everyone else has got Tulsa minus 1, 1.5. So stick with that. Let's talk about your boys. Georgia Tech going to VaTech. VaTech by 12.5. VaTech that much better than Georgia Tech? 2 scores?
Yeah, because traditionally, Bud Foster has always been the one team that could shut Paul Johnson's offense down. Mm-hmm. And given how badly Georgia Tech has gone for them, like, this is not their best Georgia Tech team to begin with. And yeah, that's just a recipe for a beatdown.
Ole Miss going to Texas A&M. Looks like Trevor Knight out, Chad Kelly out, so both starting quarterbacks out. A&M's favored by 10.5. I think Ole Miss wins.
This is a weird game to pick. This feels like a game where some weirdness happens. I'll take Ole Miss.
Yeah. We're probably both going to look really dumb.
Yeah. I mean, that's just one. That's an uncertainty pick where it's just like, you know what? I have no idea what's going to happen. I'm taking the point.
I trust A&M to blow it is what I think we're both saying. All right. Mississippi State catching 30 versus Alabama. Coming off a big win. So that program, those players are probably kind of fired off. I think maybe they think in their head they can beat Alabama. They're wrong, but I don't know if they're going to lose by 30. Mississippi State's pretty bad, but I mean, motivation and energy, like, it's contagious.
Well, it is a nooner, so that's the other reason to maybe take Mississippi State, because Alabama might not start playing until like the third.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't not take Alabama.
Yeah. All right. Kentucky, Tennessee. Tennessee favored by 14. I love Kentucky.
Yeah, I do too.
Tennessee's in major trouble. It's not getting any better. And Kentucky, I mean, they lost to Georgia last week, but they didn't look that bad. They almost won. It took a last-minute drive from Georgia to win that game.
Plus, this is a rivalry game.
Yes.
The battle for the Rocky Mountain, or not the Rocky Mountain, the Appalachian Mountain Blues, whatever. I don't know what it is. This is a bigger game to Kentucky than it is to Tennessee, though.
Yeah. Historically. Speaking of rivalries, Army, Notre Dame. Notre Dame favored by 13.5. Army kind of blew it versus Air Force last week. Do they bounce back and maybe get another up? Does Notre Dame lose to another Armed Forces Academy?
I don't think so, because basically, like, they just played that same offense last week, and this is a worse version of it.
Yeah.
So,
another rivalry.
I mean, if they lose to Army, then people are in trouble. I'll just leave it at that.
This is kind of like a low key rivalry week. There's another one, LSU Arkansas. LSU's favored by 7. I like LSU to win that one by a touchdown. I think they bounce back pretty big from Alabama.
Yep. Arkansas's been up and down all year, and LSU's just got the talent advantage. I'm taking LSU.
And they've shown, if you have a solid run game, you can really put a whipping on Arkansas. So, and LSU definitely has a solid run game.
Yep.
Let's talk about the biggest rivalry in the Southeast. Auburn, Georgia. Auburn favored by 10.5. Do we like Auburn to beat Georgia with all these injuries? Or,
I mean, yeah. I don't see how Georgia keeps this one even remotely close. Because, like, they're just so bad. They're such a bad team.
And their kicker Auburn's doesn't got take stuff off his to helmet. Play for. Have you seen this nerd, Dan? This kid's wearing glasses and won't take off his helmet for interviews. He was at the press conference today. He had his helmet on.
He wants you to know he's on the football team.
Yeah.
How would you know if he didn't wear his helmet everywhere?
Yeah. Here's one I'm really interested in. South Carolina, Florida. Florida favored by 11.
Yeah. I'm taking the points. Sure.
Yeah, I'm taking South Carolina.
You know what? Hit the horn. I'm locking that up. I'm locking that up. Because, like, there's no way Florida covers anything. Like, Florida can't cover anything. Like, if
and
you
this
told
is a revenge
me that,
game for Muschamp.
Yeah. And Muschamp knows every player on that team.
Yeah.
And they're running his defense. And this game is just going to be two people throwing rocks at each other for 2 hours. It's going to end at the final score. Here's the final score. 5-3.
Ooh. All right. But let's jump west. USC, Washington. Washington getting 8.5 or 9. I like them to kill. I don't think USC's like, I know USC's playing well. Washington's really good. They've been really catching fire lately.
If Washington's going to drop a game other than the Apple Cup, this seems like the one they could lose.
Yeah.
And this would be like USC's, okay, yeah, we got that one big, we bagged that one big elk and put it on our mantle, and it was Washington. We screwed up their season.
I just think Washington's playing good. I think not getting in the top four last week is still going to keep them hungry and motivated. I know they're in there this week, but it's the team that, you know, I don't think they think people respect them, and that's kind of dangerous with a talented team like Washington. Maybe I'm overrating Washington a bit, but I really like what they're doing. So, and then let's jump finally to the Midwest. A nooner. Baylor, Oklahoma. Oklahoma favored 14.5, 15.
Yeah.
I think they blow out Baylor. Baylor's been collapsing ever since they wore all black to protest Art Briles firing. It seems like the football gods have not been kind.
This is a team in disarray. The coaches are all fighting with the head coach. The players are yelling at the coaching staff. Everything's falling apart. And it's getting worse because every week more stuff leaks out about the sex scandals there that got them in all this trouble to begin with. So I Oklahoma's a damn shot better than TCU, and TCU blew the doors off this team. So
yeah. So is there anything this week you're looking forward to college football? Like maybe a game we didn't mention, or maybe one we did. Like, is there a player or anything that you're really interested in seeing?
I'm obviously got my eyes on Troy versus Appalachian State, big Sun Belt matchup at 3:30 Saturday.
You don't get bigger than Appalachian.
You can't get beater. That's the Power Hour Bowl. It's Western North Carolina versus Lower Alabama.
I'm from mid Georgia. It's like Georgia Look, State.
But you're an Auburn person. That's just the way it is.
Who's never lived near Auburn in his life?
It doesn't matter. You're officially Frey.
Your arch nemesis. I'm looking forward to, you know what? It's tomorrow. Duke UNC, biggest rivalry in sports. Right?
Yeah, I hope they redesigned the rivalry trophy to make it look cleaner, but the thing with the rivalry trophy has always been that you spray paint the victory bell. The team that wins it spray paints the bell. And so if they stop spray painting, that rivalry's dead to me.
Then what's the point? If you're not going to spray paint, what's the point even Duke UNC playing? Everybody really just wants to watch them play basketball anyway. So.
Yep. But the Duke Carolina rivalry did give me one of my favorite things in college football. Two of them actually. One was when Steve Spurrier was at Duke and Mack Brown was the head coach at Carolina. Steve Spurrier used to mock Mack Brown by calling him Mr. Football because you know Steve Spurrier would always joke that Mack Brown hasn't diagrammed a play in his life, wouldn't know where to start. And the favorite thing Spurrier did as Duke head coach is he was the first coach at Duke to beat Carolina on Chapel Hill Field in a long, long time. And they spent like 2 hours out on the field taking pictures in front of the scoreboard and just like, let's have some fun out here. And ever since then, when Carolina loses a home game, the scoreboard turns off immediately.
Yeah.
It's called the Steve Spurrier rule.
Like really started a lot of teams turning off the scoreboard.
Sure.
But yeah, as we get ready to close out, anything you want to plug? I've got an FU of the week I'd like to shout out.
Well, I'll plug my Twitter at DanMPFord. Check that out. I've been just retweeting other people saying smart things for the last day, and then just tweeting links to Nick Cave songs.
Yeah.
So
my fuck you of the week, it's gonna go to the flu. Battling the flu right now, people. I'm not feeling great. This show kind of felt low energy from me. It's because I had to go get an IV today because I couldn't stop vomiting water and liquid out of my body and was very dehydrated. And I powered through this like Jordan. It was my flu cast. I think, it was solid 25-point game for me. But hopefully I'm recovered next week because I think I'm about to die right now. I'm probably, as soon as this cast is over, I'm probably going to go vomit. So there's a fun visual to get you ready for your weekend.
Yeah. It's not a power hour without a vomit trip.
Yes. So let's get out of here.
Let's get out of here. You know what? We gave you all the entertainment we could muster. So sing along with the song and play the music, Jason.
Build that wall, Paul.